Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at JaegerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
Hello, everyone. This is Phil Yeager, and welcome to my podcast, CPA Review and More. We're not talking about CPA Review. As you know, most of our podcasts are on more other topics. And I just want you to know that we have been away from the studio for a while, but I believe we've had first run episodes. Is that impressive? First run. Okay. And you know, we try to get as many new ones. In fact, every week I believe our podcast is brand new. And usually we're way ahead. So we have a library of ones to, you watch, listen, whatever. And by the way, thank you very much. I know our number one city, by the way, is Atlanta. People listen to Atlanta. And they tell me they listen to it driving home. And I think, don't you have better things to do than listen to me driving home? There's always Sirius XM. By the way, I'm not affiliated with them. But anyway, thank you very much. And today, our guest is, and by the way, we have scoured the country looking for this gentleman, all right? And he's down in Arkansas. If you've never been in Arkansas, I've never been there. That would be the South. Is that correct?
Yes, we're in the mountain areas of Arkansas, so it's more of a Midwestern vibe to it.
Isn't there a TV show on, HBO now that is, it's the last season. I forget the name of it.
Ozark.
Ozarks, that's it.
Right. Now that's Lake of the Ozarks, and that's up in the northern parts of the Ozark Mountains, right as it trails off, and that's actually in Missouri. So I'm quite a ways south of there. It's a beautiful lake. Okay. It's huge. It's really big. But it's a beautiful lake. So we're more in the northwest part of Arkansas, right on the movie True Grit and the book True Grit is set here where I live.
Now, if you ask people a little older, I'm not saying we're a little older. Yes, you ever heard of True Grit, the movie? And they'll say, no. And who was in that movie? I said, a gentleman by the name of John Wayne. I think we heard of him. But, I remember I went to a concert. I was teaching CPA Review Live, and I was all excited. I was going to a concert the next day when I was teaching, and I said, I'm going to see Barry Manilow, okay? And they looked at me like, who is Barry Manilow? And I said, you don't know Barry Manilow? How about Neil Diamond? You know, they'd never heard of him either. So it started making me feel like I was 98 years old, But but True Grit, you want to know? I've never seen the movie.
There's two versions. There's a much newer one with Jeff Bridges and Matt Damon.
I'll have to watch that.
Yeah. And it's a little bit, it's a fictional story based upon some of the real life characters of the Marshals at that time. And it is, the latest one is more true to the book. So.
Now, Tom Kirkham, is it, am I pronouncing that right, Tom?
Yeah, Kirkham.
He's not on as an author or a reviewer of books or movies. All right. Tom has, he's in the business of cybersecurity. Now, I have never interviewed anyone in cybersecurity. I met someone, I got to meet Robert Hershovich, and I don't know what he is. He's cybersecurity.
Yes, well, he's more of a celebrity now. He sold his company.
He sold his company. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I assume he's a billionaire. Is that correct?
I don't really.
Well, they say that on Shark
Tank. No, it's not a topic. I've met him, but that's not something I ask him.
I had the privilege of going to the Shark Tank set because I made a contribution to one of his charities, a football team in Croatia, Canada. I don't remember, but I got to go to that set. I spoke to him for about 20 minutes. That's about it. And he was just going out with that dancer from Dancing with the Stars. I think they were engaged or married or whatever, but the nicest man. And I didn't really get to speak to him a lot, but yeah, nice gentleman.
Yes.
But anyway, tell us what cybersecurity is, first of all.
Well, cybersecurity is basically what we do is help people improve their defensive posture against hackers all over the world. You know, we are constantly under attacks, all of us. And most of these attacks are automated bots. They're automated software that are probing networks for vulnerabilities. Other types of attacks are phishing emails, you know, where an email comes into your inbox and it's basically an attacker attempting to con you into doing something, you know, whether it's when we hire new people, inevitably they get targeted on phishing emails. And it's something along the lines that'll look like it's coming from me or their direct report. And it'll say, hey, go to the store and get me 10 Apple $100 gift cards and send me the numbers. Other phishing emails may be, hey, it's me, wire $50,000 to this bank account. And then the automated probing and sniffing against routers and firewalls, looking for vulnerabilities, looking for vulnerable websites, which is quickly becoming a big problem. Harvesting of passwords to like email accounts. We're seeing a big spike in business email compromises and being exploited. And to the accounting firm, you've got to understand what your true risk are and your vulnerabilities and then address them. And that's what IronTech does. We are what's known in the business as a managed security service provider. So it's not just the technical controls that, and everyone listening has some sort of layer of security, right? Hopefully everybody's at least got antivirus, and then you've got a firewall of some sort, and you've got a spam filter on your email, but none of those things work 100%. So our mission is really taking these people that are only 80 or 90% protected and getting them up to 99.99%. And that way you don't have to lose sleep at night wondering if tomorrow's the day you get hit with a ransomware attack. You know, you don't get that anxiety.
What would be an example of a ransomware attack?
Great question. The way ransomware attacks typically work, and I'm going to describe one method of attack, okay? Someone received an email, and it has a sense of urgency. They use psychological manipulation techniques and social engineering. It's just a con job, but it says something like, hey, these invoices are outstanding, and we're going to turn your services off immediately if we don't hear from you. So you say a bookkeeper gets that. It doesn't matter if it's an accounting office, a law firm, a medical office. They're just trying to do their job. They go, well, I know I paid those bills. The email looks like it's coming from the vendor. So they open up the spreadsheet. Then the spreadsheet calls a macro, and then it begins encrypting all the files that it can find. And one of the problems that we discover almost without exception with new clients, because IT runs things for productivity and efficiency reasons, it's common for them to share files to everybody on the network. Well, when it's encrypting, not only does it encrypt the local files, but it goes out on the network to find anything shared on the network, and it encrypts those files. Now, once it's finished encrypting every single file it can find, then and only then does it flash up on the screen demanding a ransom. That ransom can range anywhere from, say, $3,000 all the way up to tens of millions of dollars. And what a lot of people don't realize is they hear of these things like the Colonial Pipeline breach, you know, where it disrupted petroleum. You may have experienced a little bit of that. Disrupted petroleum distribution on the East Coast. The JBS meatpacking thing up in, I think it was North Dakota.
Yes.
They hear about these on CNN or read them in the New York Times or whatever. But the vast majority of these attacks, especially ransomware, are non-targeted. They are done at scale, at volume, because the hacking industry, both the good guys and the bad guys, are highly specialized. They're vertically specialized. And it's literally being done by thousands of people all over the world. And just that description of that attack, that email that that victim, potential victim, received, they probably sent 100,000 of them out. So to them, it's just a number game. It means is they don't know who you are and they don't care who you are. They're just trying to get a good conversion rate. And the whole thing, the whole collection and everything's mostly automated.
How do they actually get into the records? I mean, what do they have, these hackers, what do they have to get to get into your records? All right. Is there a technique that they know to get into the information? All right. And really sort of, you know, crack it. I don't know if I'm explaining that well enough, but you know, how, if I was a hacker, what information would I need if I wanted to hack your company? All right. How would I do that? I'm not,
an we're email.
Not so, it's sort of like, we're not telling them how to build a bomb or something, but
right.
What does a hacker do? How does he, what's his background to get, so he can get this information?
Well, it's simply an email. That's the most common way to hack into a company. Yeah.
Okay, so an email comes to you. Let's do an example here. An email comes to me, all right? I've an accounting firm, all right?
Right.
What might that email say?
Well, it's going to try to entice you to deliver a payload, a malicious payload inside your firm. It's going to penetrate your network security. The network, you know, the firewall and all that. Email's just going to go in, right? If the spam filter doesn't catch it, and no spam filter is 100% accurate, okay? Some of them are just tighter or looser than others. But some get through. We see them all the time, and our spam filter is pretty tight. But they're in the wording of the email, and who it appears to be from, carefully selected. So let's say I get a list of 100,000 accountants in the United States or New York or wherever. It doesn't matter. There's 100,000 of them. And maybe it looks like it's coming from Intuit or Peachtree or whatever it may be. And it has, maybe a technique is to fool them into taking an action and creating a sense of urgency. It could be 100 other tactics. And they're highly skilled at that. The ransomware attackers, the person hitting the send button, their specialty is con jobs. But instead of it being a one-to-one street con, it's a one-to-many or 1 to 100,000 at a time. And so they word the email, and they make it appear as if you need to do something about this right away. So you know, this is serious. I know I paid these bills. Let me see what they're saying I didn't pay. So they open up the file attachment. Bam, the payload is delivered. It's basically how it happens. Now, there's other ways to deliver payloads. We're seeing an increase in compromised websites. So in the case of an accounting firm you know, obviously you have a website, marketing and sales purposes, but maybe you use it for other things. Well, most of these websites are built on WordPress. Well, WordPress is just another piece of software. The server rating system and the web server software, one of hundreds of millions around the world, they have vulnerabilities just like everything else does. It's Mac OS. Well, if you don't patch your website, vulnerabilities, because it hasn't been patched, payload just to any site visitor.
You, by the way, Tom, you are freezing every couple of seconds, not as much, but how's you? Okay.
Try something. I'm sorry about
that. I'm actually hacking the company now as I speak to you. That's why, no. Go ahead.
Well, we don't do internet service provider. That's not. All
right.
Yeah. So the internal network, I assure you, is stable.
Well, I think, I don't know if it's the fact that a lot of people are using Zoom and now more people are using it than ever. I don't know if that causes it, but anyway, so I'm an accounting firm. Okay. I have what size accounting firm do you deal with? I mean, what size employees, that type of thing. Is there a minimum number of people? You deal with larger ones or deal with medium, whatever. What do you deal with as far as cybersecurity for accounting firms? What kind of firm?
Well, our specialty is small to medium size. So if you're just a one-person firm, but we've got clients with dozens and hundreds of accountants.
All right. And they're going to call you up and they're going to say, Tom, we want to protect our clients' records, their tax returns. All right. What do you do? How do you take it from there?
So it's all a part about doing an audit and or a risk assessment. And we've got a lot of different techniques. And so we start by, you know, what's the size of your firm? You know, what's your annual revenue? Okay. What are your clients like? What is their revenue and what business are they, even the client's risk, you know, got for every one of your client or the tax data you have for every one of your client. And so once we assess all the vulnerabilities, you know, if you're not doing so, if people are reusing their credentials across multiple websites, you know, the same username and password, that's a high risk practice. And so once we identify the vulnerabilities and technical vulnerabilities, human vulnerabilities, understand how the network itself is configured and where everything is, the next step is, okay, let's address the vulnerabilities. Let's put some enterprise-grade technical and administrative controls in place. So like I said earlier, you can go from being 95% protected, which is not good enough, to that 99.99%. So you don't fall into that conversion rate of victims. You want to be in the 99%, you know, out of that 100,000 email, you want to be the one that did not become a victim. But if you don't have an enterprise-grade technical security controls, I'm talking about things that the Fortune 100 use, that the Department of Defense is finally, in all agencies, all federal agencies are finally implementing these defensive tools. You know, the days of antivirus protection's over. They're using nation-state cyber warfare offensive weapons against us.
Mm.
And they're using the NSA cyber weapons against us each and every single day. The NSA was hacked.
Yeah, I think I remember that, yeah.
And weapons were stolen.
Huh.
Changed about 5 years ago or 6 years ago, whenever that hack occurred.
So you're saying that the days of antivirus programs are basically going away? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying antivirus alone from an in, from protecting that workstation and that server is not reasonable efforts. It's simply not good enough. It's better than nothing. Yeah, it's better than nothing, but it's, you know, that Norton even includes a crypto miner in their internet protection suite, whatever it's called now, which is the total antithesis of what they should be doing with their protection suite.
As an accountant in an accounting firm, do I have to know what cybersecurity does, what it'll do? Or am I turning to someone like yourself, say, hey, we, our firm, all right, people are hacking into our clients' tax returns. They're getting their social security numbers, okay? What type of knowledge, you know, what's happening now in for the CPAs, especially the CPA exam, they're expecting the CPAs to have more knowledge in information technology. And I think to myself, does that mean that I have to go back now and get a degree in information technology to keep up? Or what do I have to know at a minimum?
Right. The simplest thing to do is to go to the specialist like us. It's not do-it-yourself anymore. And I know it's common for CPAs to do their own IT. They're so related, and accountants have used technology as soon as it was available, you know, back in the IBM PC, MS-DOS days, right? So they got accustomed to different types of networking, and they picked it all up and everything. But you think about the pace of change in IT, information technology, and computers, and how fast that is. Add the cops and robbers issue to it, and add the military component to it, because cyber warfare is happening all over the globe right now. The pace of change is 5 to 10 times greater in the cybersecurity world than it is in the IT world.
So it's all this stuff. I saw that you deal with attorneys also.
Right.
How does an attorney, what type of cybersecurity problems would an attorney have, a legal firm?
Oh, well, it depends on, and this gets back into your specialty as an accountant as well. So, for example, in the law business, there's so many different specialties. So if you're a personal injury lawyer, you're dealing with HIPAA medical records. You've got HIPAA compliance and regulatory things. You've got to have proper protection in place. Attorneys have ethical requirements to protect client data. And I know accountants do too. And what we're seeing across all industries is more and more compliance and regulations around these advanced cyber tools. They're requiring it. Insurance companies are requiring it. But getting back to the specialty, you know, if you're a patent lawyer and you deal with intellectual property, we have to seriously consider that China, the nation state of China, would love to have that data. And because they are known, they are the largest, they're more intellectual property than any other nation state and anybody else, really. And it just depends. That's why we have to analyze the firm carefully to make sure we discover as many possible vulnerabilities and the scope of the risk. That's why it's important to know how big the firm is. Do you gross $500,000 a year, or you gross $50 million a year? You know, the higher the stakes are, the more clients you have, the greater the risk. Only 6% of companies survive longer than 2 years after a data breach.
You're scaring people.
I don't mean to, and I could tell.
I'm not saying that it's a bad thing, but it's listening to this. I know with our type of business, CPA Review, we sell materials to prepare for the exam. And we're constantly getting letters from people from India. And we know India doesn't, at least, I don't think they really appreciate your intellectual property. You'll, you know, it's very hard to protect yourself. If we sold stuff in India, all right, is there a way of really protecting ourselves, that people are not going to start reproducing this and selling it themselves. It's very hard to protect our materials. So we really stay away from sales in India or China, that type of thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people, that's kind of an old school defensive, or I assume you're doing geofencing. You just don't make the website available in India, right?
I never thought about it. No. Well, wait a minute. Maybe they can. It might be available. I have to find out myself. I don't know.
Right. And that was effective maybe 10 years ago. There's all sorts of different strategies to make it appear like I'm sitting in Dallas, Texas, but in reality, I'm in the Philippines or in Moscow.
Is the Philippines also bad as far as intellectual property violations?
No. China is your number one, you know, especially the stealing corporate intellectual property for, you know, patents and things like that. It gives them a competitive, that by far is coming out of China. I'm not sure about who the number two is on the list, but it would be easy to presume that India may do some of that, but I don't really know for sure. I just know China is the big one. So,
how did you get into it? What is your background to be in cybersecurity? When you went to school, was there a major involved?
I majored in economics, but I was a hobbyist with computers, and my career fairly quickly evolved into, I was running a software company and a founder and running that software company. And then about 20 years ago, I founded this company. And I always had a knack for thinking like a criminal. You know, I played out things in my mind and the scenarios. If I were to rob this bank, how would I go about it in order to get away with it? And it's just intellectual exercise, just curiosity. It always liked movies like Ocean's 11 and all of that, you know, those type of movies. But a real seminal. So anyway, I was passionate about IT, passionate about technology. I've been doing it for 40 years, investing. My whole life revolves around technology, always has. But in 2015, I was visited by an FBI agent, walked in the office. Is Tom, he holds up his badge. I'm so-and-so with the FBI. Is Tom Kirkham here? And I said, yeah, that's me. And he goes, well, you're in trouble, but not with us. And after talking to him for a few minutes, I discovered I was on an ISIS kill list. Name, address, place of employment, on and on and on. Personal information, named on an ISIS kill list. And it was in that year that there was about four or five of them that came out. Most of them were, you know, New York metro area, political figures, military figures, law enforcement figures. But there was one list that was totally random all over the nation, about 7,000 or 8,000, something like that. And I was on that list. And it was a list that was due to a breach systems, if you may remember Sun, the computer company.
Yes.
I was getting a demonstration of some new hardware of theirs and a card, and I had to have approval. They had to have my ID and everything in order just to use the equipment because it wasn't released. At least I don't think they are. And they harvested that database from Sun. So it was totally random that I was on an ISIS kill list.
On that list, what did they want to do? They weren't going to do anything. What were they going to do to you? I'm just curious. You said you were on a list, ISIS. What was that list to do? And not shoot you or kill you, was it?
Yes, it was a kill list. Yes, it was a kill list.
I think we need to change the whole theme of these podcasts. You know.
well, think about this. You know, just like nation states have cyber warfare units. Ours is the NSA, and I don't know the names of all the others. In Russia, they got, what's it called? They got a bunch of them that goes by the bear name. But all these, but the terrorist organizations, and ISIS at that time was very large, a warfare unit called the United Cyber Caliphate. They were very skilled at what they did. Their objective was to recruit lone wolves, people sympathetic to their cause in the United States. Hey, you can be a full-fledged member of ISIS if you kill somebody on this list. Another objective was to tie up law enforcement and create chaos all over the country. You know, when you got thousands of people on a kill list and FBI sends an agent to each and every one, that's a lot of resources to commit and tie them up where they can't do investigations and things like that. So, and there was probably other objectives as well, but recruitment and chaos is the two main things. And that goes back to the threat actors themselves, right? Their objective, well, that particular objective wasn't about money, but they do have specialists there that distributed ransomware specifically to raise money to fund their military and other objectives. Specialist in part of the United Cyber Caliphate.
When you heard you were on a list to basically eliminate you, what was your feeling? I mean, what was your first thought? Leave the country, or what was your first thought?
My first thought was like you. You know, I'm 15, 20 minutes. I said, "Oh, I've never seen a badge." You know. Can I just, that's weird, you know. And so finally I said, well, so what does this mean? They're going to hack my bank accounts or something? And he looks at me square in the eye and says, no, they want to kill you.
Oh.
And that's when the gravity of the situation started sinking in. And then I realized that there's lone wolves in my town. They've been picked up and arrested. They almost started shooting people in a shopping mall here, and they're Americans. And I realized I have to take this threat seriously. And not only that, it quickly dawned on me, my family members, anybody I'm around is potentially at risk. I kept it quiet at first. I never went public about it until a couple of years ago, maybe three or so, but I kept it quiet. I figured that'd be a lower profile and all of that. But I did inform, you know, friends and families and colleagues of mine. I started locking up the gate and made sure I kept my door locked, made sure I had plenty of distributed throughout the house.
Did you exercise your Second Amendment?
And I relaxed. Yeah. And you know, the ISIS kill list is kind of a lifetime
deal.
It's like
great.
It's almost like a fatwa, you know.
Now, with someone like myself,
it's starting to reconstitute itself a little bit.
Well, the fact that I know you now, is that dangerous for me?
I think you're fine, Phil.
Okay, I'll sleep better tonight because I'm just an accountant. This is very interesting. This is, I watched the.
So what a lot of people think, going back to, accounting and these scary things that I'm talking about, and then especially, I was talking to or helping a reporter out with some questions the other day. Can robotic surgery equipment be tampered with? Absolutely. I describe a scenario in my book that's coming out next month where a robotic surgery went horribly wrong and kills a patient. And so I'm trying to... I have to use the lesson of fear to describe the real world possibility that if you don't up your defensive game, you likely will be a victim of a cyber attack of some sort. And hoping it doesn't happen to you is not a strategy. And I could tell stories that are much scarier than this, but they sound, to the layperson, sound incredulous, but they are indeed true. So I'm not exaggerating by any means the risk to all of them. The White House issued a letter almost exactly a year ago that says everybody in the United States, every business in the United States needs to do these five things. And one of those is you've got to have a skilled security team. Yeah, not just.
Is that the five recommendations you talk about to protect your firm from cyber attacks?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about those? What are the five?
All right. So if everybody just play the podcast back or write it down if you're in the office or whatever, I'm going to go through these kind of quickly. The first ones, you've got to put a technical control in that's in the class of what's known as EDR, Endpoint Detect and Response. It is a artificial endpoint detection and prevention system. In other words, replace your antivirus with it because it's really better. Antivirus is old tech. This EDR class of product will dramatically improve your posture. The next one is use multi-factor authentication wherever you can. Not chance. If you've got it turned on, I hope you have it turned on. Book, you can turn it on Amazon, and it's free.
Oh, it is.
EDR ran and managed and monitored by professionals, but MFA is free. You got to have a skilled security team. If you look at the regulatory requirements for improving your cybersecurity defense, follow what's known as NIST best practices, the NIST cybersecurity framework. Three of those, or four of those things, there's five on it. You've got to identify vulnerabilities, then you've got to protect, and then you've got to have a detection system already in place, which means skilled security professionals, and you've got to have a response system already in place. If you come to us in the middle of a breach specialty, that's a whole different specialty, because when that happens, it creates a threat vector to not only us, but all of our clients as well. So, and all of our stakeholders in the organization. Turn on disk encryption. Okay? Encrypt your own data. And don't wait. You know, if it's a serious software update that's patching a serious vulnerability, you don't have the luxury of waiting a month till they work the kinks out. You've got to evaluate each software update and determine, does that need to be put on immediately, tonight, or just during a normal software patch upgrade? You know, if your IT is managed properly, you have a maintenance window, right? Like every Saturday at 2 a.m., we install all the patches and reboot everything, and it doesn't affect your work. But every once in a while, there's a patch that simply can't wait. It's too big of a risk to not patch immediately. Another part is you've got to stay on top of this threat intelligence. You got to stay on top of geopolitical dynamics. And then you've got to adjust your defense as needed. That's basically the five things that the White House recommends.
It seems to me that if I was concerned about this, I wouldn't start learning it and asking myself those five questions. If I felt maybe I needed cybersecurity, I mean, if I need plumbing work done, I'm not going to do the work. I'm not a plumber, okay? I would think that if they have any question about whether there's a cybersecurity problem in their companies, they should contact you. Am I correct?
Yes, absolutely. But they do have a cybersecurity problem. If you don't have at least one or two of the five things, you've got a defensive weakness, a serious one, in our belief. You know, the legal industry uses the phrase reasonable efforts to protect client data. If a law firm gets breached and I testify as an InfoSec or cybersecurity specialist, expert at it, and found out they didn't have an EDR or they didn't have a skilled security team, I would have to testify that they didn't use reasonable efforts to secure their client data. You know, it's not that you don't need it. It's not just me saying everyone needs it. The White House knows this. The NSA knows this. And it's not just critical infrastructure. You know, they if Putin decides to let all of the criminal hackers loose and attack the United States and create chaos, he's not going to care what they do. Just wink, wink, knock, knock, nod, nod. Do whatever you want to anybody in the United States. It'll be probably the beginning of a cyber pandemic, a global cyber pandemic. So
that's the last thing we need in this country.
Yeah, it'll make COVID look like a speed bump.
Right, right. Now, you mentioned a book. Are you coming out with a book on cybersecurity?
Yeah, I'm actually...
You haven't had one with you, Tom, to show us? Oh, very nice. It's a Cyber Pandemic Survival Guide. And by the way, I like the cover. Very nice. Okay,
yeah,
what is in
you.
That? What is in that book that I would want to read about and understand? Is that for laymen or is that for people like yourself to read?
Oh, absolutely not. It's strictly for the layman, and it's one of those books that ties together a fictional story with here's what's going on in this story right now, right? So the characters in the story are going through a cyber attack, and it's life-threatening, and it opens with a different scene and all of this, and then I speak to what's really going on, and the number one thing that I drill home throughout the book. It's an easy read, but the number one thing I drill home throughout the book is leadership failure to act to protect this town from a serious cyber attack. And you know, it's real easy to make a management decision to tell your head of IT or your outsourced IT company, say, hey, make sure we're covered on cybersecurity. And go, right? You know, you just hope it's there. What my goal is with this book is to not only explain that it's a leadership issue, but that the game has changed, and you can't think the way. Especially, I know a lot of you listening may be IT specialists or you know a lot about IT, but in the InfoSec business, we understand that serious cybersecurity defense is not in their wheelhouse, okay? These tools are highly specialized. The way the companies are set up are totally different. You know, we have to respond within seconds. Continuous monitor 24/7. IT, 4-hour service level agreement. You know, we promise to respond in 4 hours. It's not acceptable. So it changes the whole structure of the company and how everything's monitored and all of this, that, and the other. So what I'm trying to do in the book is drill home to company leaders and owners and presidents, whatever your head honcho title is, that this can happen to you. And it could happen at a large, it will happen at some point.
I wanted to ask you, is this your first book or have you written another one?
It's my first real book. I do have a book, if anyone's interested, is...
Well, can we bring back the other... First of all, the book you're coming out with now, when is this coming out, this book?
Hopefully in July, pretty soon.
In July, well,
yeah. So you can go to tomkirkham.com and there's a link there to where you can be notified when the book... And anyway, I wrote another one about how to protect or how to select an IT services provider, where I go in and explain fixed IT provider and an MSP, which is a great book, and MSP is the way to go. You know, they proactively manage your network, and if they have their pricing and everything set up the right monthly rate. And things just don't go down. They keep you running. And in tax season, it's worth every penny to make sure they are there. Now, it depends on your specialty. You may not be as sensitive to tax season as some firms are. But you probably have other reasons why you can't go down. You bill in by the hour. How much does 5 hours of downtime cost if you've got 20 people in your office? How much does 5 days cost? You know, you assign a value to both your risk because you're dependent on technology, and you assign a money value to what would happen if we had a major extortionware attack. How is that going to how much does it cost to protect my reputation each and every year? Protect my client data each and every year so their identities aren't stolen. And if you've got cybersecurity insurance, there's a lot of issues with that. First of all, they're specifying these five things. A lot of them are. They're saying all the way down to the vendor level. And they're all best of breed. They're all good. And that's all we use. We've never seen one yet that we didn't have the right tools. And they do a risk analysis and assign premiums based on that. So if you're not providing cybersecurity training, that's a higher risk. So instead of your annual premium being $2,000 a year, it may be $12,000 a year. Other underwriters are getting out of the business altogether. And the one thing about cybersecurity insurance, it's like all other insurance. It's the last thing you want to use, and it will not make you 100% whole again. Your reputational damage. You've got a report in every state in the nation if you have a breach. And it's ethical, you know. How are your clients going to react? I know how I reacted. I was using a small accounting firm, and they got acquired by an accounting firm that had used us years and years ago. They didn't use us anymore, basically around money. They had a ransomware attack, and they had to pay a ransom of, I don't know, it was just $3,000. Well, a friend of mine was doing their IT at the time. I know all about this because they got the Bitcoin from me to pay the ransom because they needed to get back up and running. They were down for 2 or 3 days. And I don't remember if it was tax season or not. But regardless, when they acquired the firm that I was using, I switched immediately. I had nothing personal against them. Great people. Awesome, awesome people. Great accountants. But I couldn't afford that risk to all of my stakeholders of my accounting firm being a threat vector into IronTech and many, many other aspects of it.
Did you say there was Bitcoin? Is that how?
Right.
All right, so you accepted Bitcoin for the services?
No. I don't have a problem with taking Bitcoin for services, but I had Bitcoin. I have Bitcoin, and the firm that was a victim of the ransomware attack, in order to pay the ransom, they bought the Bitcoin off of me. It was the quickest, easiest way for them to get it. And that's how I learned that they'd been breached.
Yeah. You know, we talk about cryptocurrency, but I don't hear a lot about it. People using it freely, like, you know, our currency, but because it's so, isn't it really very volatile? I mean, don't have a retirement plan with Bitcoin because, you know, your retirement dollars could change. All right. It's very volatile. Am I correct?
The whole history of it. It's a brand new technology. It's only, 11, 12 years old. So, I mean, this is brand new. The first person to use a credit card, it was made out of paper. I think it was a diner's club. Yes. What do you think when he presented at a hotel and said, this is how I want to pay for it? You know, that's crazy. That's not real money, right? Well, we're in those days in the 1950s when credit cards first came out, you know, with Bitcoin. But I think this is far beyond the scope of cybersecurity. I do want to make one point about that. Ransomware has been around a lot longer than Bitcoin has. This criminal technique has been around about 20 years. There's other mechanisms for them to get paid. And they used to, last ransomware I actually saw with my own eyes, there's cards that you can get. They're like prepaid visas, but there's different companies that do it. But Bitcoin, I mean, when it came, the friction out of moving the payment around. And that's why.
You know, I'm listening to all this, and I'm thinking, I probably other people listening and saying, you know, our society is getting so complicated, you know. And the question is, if I have a business, what do I have to know? I mean, besides trying to sell my products or with services. Now I have to deal with this cybersecurity problems. Do you think this might turn people off from going into businesses as much, or it'll just continue? It's just an additional thing they have to be aware of.
Well, it's a generational thing, right? I didn't grow up with computers.
Right.
That's something I learned as an adult. But, you know, most of the people in our organization are in their 20s and 30s. So to them, it's just accepted that this is a risk. I need to take reasonable efforts to secure my identity, to secure my personal information. So it's already baked in, right? So, you know, they're just accustomed to it. They got a smartphone. And, you know, when you're in your 50s and 60s and 70s or whatever it is, you had to learn that, whereas the younger generations it was just part of their life from day one. I remember when I thought power windows and air conditioning was, holy cow, you got to be rich to have that in an automobile.
Right. It was an extra, actually.
Yeah. I was 12 years old before I had a color TV. So, you know, it's like you said very early on, you just felt like a 89-year-old person. And it's like, yeah, I understand that completely. And there's probably lots of different generations listening to this podcast. But it's really to that leadership deal. If you know, one of my sayings is, if you don't run your IT and your cybersecurity professionally, you're going to be hacked. Professionals. Day hackers in the basement and eating Cheetos, all that stereotype that the older generation thinks when they think hacker, those are over with. We're talking a multi-billion dollar global industry that is vertically specialized and done at scale using nation state level cyber weapons. And it's that simple.
If a company is listening to this podcast and they think they may have a cybersecurity problem, all right, then they could contact you. And how would they get in touch with you?
IronTechSecurity.com is the simplest way. Just go to their website, and there's tons and tons of resources on there. You can sign up for our threat advisory. And it's not a marketing list. It's only the things that we think you need to know. We take that fire hose of threat intelligence that we're bombarded with daily threat advisory out. So it's a real good way of the things that our client profile that we feel is important to know at that time. They don't need to know that this fish tank thermometer has got a vulnerability in it, right? Or this refrigerator has a vulnerability in it. No, we're going to send out things that the Chrome browser has vulnerabilities and they steal your credentials out of it. If you store your username and password in your browser, that's a bad security practice.
Yeah, I would think so. Yes. I know that.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people do it. Yeah, a lot of people do it. And there's just hundreds and hundreds of policies, procedures that are considered and then we just implement, you know, and it's not, it probably, whenever you hear Fortune 100 level tools for defense or you hear enterprise grade, oh gosh, this is going to cost thousands upon thousands of dollars. And you'd be surprised how reasonable it actually is, because just like the bad guys or the black hat hackers are doing things at scale, so are the good guys, you know. We protect literally thousands of endpoints. That gives us scale to provide these services. I'm talking InfoSec professionals. We're a team of about 15, but we're backed up by hundreds of InfoSec professionals all over the world. That their job is to protect every device that we are. that we're on, that we're monitoring and managing. So it just a 5 or 10 minute conversation sometimes will, okay, you need this, this, and this. The larger firms, yeah, we were going to do a more formal audit or risk assessment. But it doesn't have to be difficult. The main thing is go to a security firm, an MSSP, please, and no, I mean no disrespect, IT people make us better, we make them better. Most of the time, an external IT company or even a staff IT company is relieved that they're not being the security everyone needs today. So relationship with your IT company, keep it.
I would recommend that if anybody has questions on cybersecurity, you are looking at Tom Kirkham, all right, and get in touch with him. If you're not sure, you know, just get in touch with him. I'm sure he would enjoy talking, you know, and maybe you need cybersecurity in your company and you're not aware of it, all right? A lot of people, like, we're accountants. We might know tax areas or that, but, you know, cybersecurity would be the last thing on my mind, unless I'm, you know, a big CPA firm doing, public yield audits. But, the smaller companies that just do tax returns might say, oh, I don't have to worry about that. But it seems to me that if you're not sure, better safe than sorry. I really do believe that. And also, not only is Tom in cybersecurity, all right, he has become an author. And what's your book again, Tom, just to mention it?
Yeah, I'm going to hold it up again. Is that all right?
Hold it up again. It's a fictional
book.
Survival
game.
It's fiction.
It's half fiction and half business advice.
Oh, okay.
It's the management and leadership decisions that were, the story is about the management and leadership decisions that failed to protect this town. So, but at the end of it, you know, at the back, we get into the actual tactics and techniques that you need to do today. And we'll have more and more of those resources on my website once the book comes out.
And that should be coming out, you said, about July, correct?
Right.
2022.
Yes, next month.
I have to look at the calendar, you know. Yes, what were you saying? Yes, next month. You know, it's going by very fast. And like every other year, you know, as you get older, all right. Now I just turned 28, but, and you never know it actually. But no, when we get older, time just goes by. But, you know, people don't realize that, but. Anyway, Tom, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And once again, Tom Kirkham is in cybersecurity. If you're not sure what it is, all right, well, you can go buy his book when it comes out, all right? You might actually learn something. I would think this man, how long have you been in this business now, Tom?
Oh, well, I've been in technology for 40 years. I've been in network administration and cybersecurity for about 20.
So you really are, can I say this? You're an expert.
Yes.
Yeah.
I am frequently compensated for speaking in front of groups about this very topic.
You're not going to charge me for this podcast, are you?
No, sir, Phil. Absolutely not you.
Thank you.
Oh, it may have sounded a little sarcastic, but I'm not compensating Phil, and he's not compensating me. So,
well, you know, if you want to send me something, it's okay.
we'll have to see about that.
Yeah. But anyway, I really enjoyed talking with you, and the people obviously did not. I got to meet Tom's. I don't know what her title is, but she's very nice, and I won't tell you where she's located, but. He has a first-rate operation. I can see that. So, Tom, I want to thank you so much. And once again, last time, look for Tom's book. It's coming out. You want to know about cybersecurity? All right. Check his website. You'll announce it on your website. Is that correct, Tom?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But they can sign up and get an actual email when it's available.
Okay. All right. And they email it to where? Tom Kirkham?
Well, if you want to reach out to me, just it's tom.kirkham@irontechsecurity.com. Nothing fancy. It's just first name dot last name at irontechsecurity.com.
Keep it simple, right?
That's right.
Very good. All right. Well, anyway, have a great summer and stay well, stay healthy. And let's hope we don't have the next 2 years like the past 2 years.
Yes.
I just got over COVID-19.
That's what I heard. Apparently you had a bad case of that.
No. I'm a wimp when it comes to illness. That's why we don't have babies. I don't have babies, but I can't stand the pain. Now I was just fatigued, and I just thought I was, maybe I was just, I needed to sleep more or something. But it's actually still hanging on to some degree. Still am tired in the afternoon, and it did affect, I had a cough from it and still have the cough. So, but I think I'll be around for at least another year. I see that coming. And, and I want to continue doing the podcast because I get to meet very nice people like you and Kinsey. Very, very nice. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. And it has absolutely been my pleasure being on your podcast. And I hope that everyone takes this as takes it a little seriously and at least just talk to some InfoSec specialist and get an assessment of what you need to do to bump your defenses up, keep you from going out of business.
Sounds it. Thank you, everyone, once again for watching, listening, the CPA Review and More podcast. We will continue. We have some interesting guests coming up in the future. All right. Just, look at our, go to JaegerCPAReview.com. That's the website for the CPA Review course. But on there, it lists all the podcasts we have done over the past, it's hard to believe, it's two and a half years, I guess. But, look at a podcast. People actually like it. They say, Phil, you're not like the typical accountant, whatever that means. Well, actually, I'm not a typical accountant because I really didn't want to be an accountant. But, I got into it and I turned it around and doing other things, taxes, something I enjoyed more. I'm not like to sit there with audits. So, but all I'm saying is go to our website, look at the podcasts, There's some interesting areas in there if you're interested in, cryptocurrency, that type of thing. So anyway, we will see you again. All right. We have a new podcast every week. All right. Please check our website and I'll find out what's coming. And I wish you all and thank you once again for watching and listening to our podcast, CPA Review More. This is Phil Jaeger. Take care. Stay well. And what I'm finding is people are not being nice to each other as a result of the pandemic. So you try to stand out and say hello, smile occasionally. All right. We need more of that. Thank you, everyone. Take care and be well.